I am Linda von Tilburg for Biz News, and with me is Michelle Patel, the Director of Citizenship and Immigration at Sable International, the immigration specialist. And today we're going to talk about UK immigration. Hi again, Michelle. Thanks for joining us at Biz News.
Hi there, Linda.
Well, can you give us an update on recent changes to UK immigration policies that are important for prospective immigrants to be aware of?
Sure. So in the last sort of 1 year, there have been sort of five major things I think that we're talking about to our listeners. We can start off with the most sort of famous one that's making the headlines at the moment, which is just costs, really. So things have just increased, and so have the UK VI fees, I'm afraid. But I think the major, the big increase has really been on the immigration health surcharge. So a surcharge that most immigration practitioners will know about, and most immigrants will have to pay to use the National Health Service here. It used to be £624 per year per person. And that's recently gone up, and it's gone up to £1,035 per person. So even before you wait for your visa, you've got to pay that per person coming into the UK. So that sort of happened in October last year, going back a year. And I guess the other major change that's happened is more on the family visa side, where the previous government wanted to reduce immigration numbers down on net migration, increased the minimum income threshold for a spouse looking to sponsor the non-British spouse to come into the UK. So I don't know if you've heard of it, but it used to be £18,600 per annum. That a British spouse had to earn if they were just sponsoring the husband or wife to come and join them into the UK, which has now gone up to £22,400 per, in terms of minimum income requirement. That was staged under the previous government to go up incrementally all the way up to about £38,000. But this government, the new government that's come in, has said, no, we won't be doing that anytime soon, until we hear back the results of a review that they instructed the Migration Advisory Committee, to go conduct, which is currently going on. So we're not out of the woods yet. I'm not saying there won't be an increase, but it looks like it's still 50-50 whether it could go ahead or not, depending on what the MAT review says. So that's the one that I know affects most people that are looking to move from South Africa or anywhere else into the UK, especially if they have a British wife or husband, and then a children, and so on. I guess the other major change was the stricter rules for international students. I'm not too sure whether you're aware of that, but again, the previous government and the current government have followed suit. They've stopped international students from bringing in dependents. So as international students coming into the UK, if you do want to come over with your spouse and the kids, you used to be able to apply for them as dependents. That's no longer possible unless you're sitting as a very certain type of course, usually at the PhD level. So again, that's looking the same way, isn't it, Linda? It's looking to where are our biggest migratory patterns and how can we reduce the amount of immigrants coming into those or in those categories? And one way they've done that is putting up these sort of hurdles, or rather in this case, taking away the ability for dependents to come in. But that's a big one. On the more positive note, they have expanded other visa categories. So one that comes into mind was the Youth Mobility Scheme. It's a scheme that we have partner countries with. And I guess the biggest change is the expansion of the scheme in 2023, leading up to this year. And the expansion included New Zealand in particular. In this case, we're in India. So there's a ballot system in India where about 5,000 applicants can apply for that scheme if you're under a certain age. And it gives you 2 years to work in the UK. And the idea is that in those 2 years, you get sponsored by a UK-based employer to continue being in the UK. With New Zealand, again, they raised the age, I think it was 30, and now it's 35. So if you're someone that's a New Zealand citizen under the age of 35, you can apply for the Youth Mobility Scheme. And there was no upper limit on how many people can come in from New Zealand as compared to India. Again, trying to meet those deficits ever since we left the European Union, perhaps. So trying to engage with young people there. More recently, I don't know if you heard, Linda, but the electronic travel authorization, ETA. So that's made some headlines, and there's some concerns around more cost to business visitors and all that. But ideally, it's a 2-year electronic travel authorization that certain countries can apply for. So if you're a national, certain countries, and you know, say, okay, you see on our website, there's a list of those countries. There's a blog, in fact, on our ETA and the news following that. But it doesn't really include a lot of countries at the moment. But the idea is for it to become at some point worldwide, and you get a 2-year visit visa based on the ETA. They say it's to increase the security around the visitors, but there are a lot of concerns around that at the moment. And I guess the last one I want to talk about briefly before we go into perhaps the next piece of this interview is the salary thresholds for skilled worker visas. So again, the UK have, the government, previous government and current government have looked at the migratory patterns, and the largest amount of people coming in a visa category is also the skilled visa category, used to previously be called the Tier 2, as you may know from our previous talks. But in April this year, they again raised the minimum salary thresholds, so making it that much more difficult for an employer to make that choice. They, you know, the general threshold has now been raised at 26,200, or the going rate. And I guess the concerns are around the healthcare system, where people don't get paid a lot. So again, that's not up for review at the moment, but what we do know is that that has led to a good noticeable decrease in the amount of work visas being issued by UK-based employers. And we've noticed that just through talking to our current engagements in terms of business partners and commercial partners who more and more are trying to recruit now, I guess, locally and train locally, which in fact is probably what they wanted, is to look inwards before you look outwards for employees. But those are the ones I want to touch on. You know, we also got the new base system for seasonal workers, something that affects the agricultural system, but I think not a lot of our listeners would be going down that route. So we won't expand that into too much. But those are the five main things that have been there worth noting for in the last 12 months when it comes to UK immigration, Linda.
Well, given that it looks a bit more difficult now and it's quite tricky to navigate it, and it seems that if you have a family, you really have to think if you're going to earn enough money, because you can't bring independence, you know, beyond a certain threshold. So is that putting people off? Is that putting South Africans off? Or are you still getting a lot of applications?
Well, that's a fair question. We're also getting applications that have reduced. You're absolutely right. We've seen at least a 5 to 6% decrease in normally what we would see at this time before those changes were made in terms of people taking it up. So people, in my opinion, at least, I think people will take it up if they decided the UK is where they want to go. But I think they have to do a lot of saving. So it's just something that's been put in your back burner and you know, something that they might do now in 2 years as compared to next year. Because you're absolutely right. If you're a family of four, you're looking at just the government fees, including the immigration health surcharge, at least upwards of £20,000. It's just government fees, which includes the immigration health surcharge, that in rands or in shillings or whatever it is, converting it to, can be a lot of money just to put down in one go. You know, so you're absolutely right. There has been a decrease. And I think it's been felt countrywide.
Well, I constantly run into young professional South Africans. So it seems that is the class that's coming over, because a lot of auditors and bookkeepers, you know, even lawyers coming over. So it seems that the profile of the person that would immigrate from a country like South Africa looks a bit different now.
I agree. I think the profile of a person, and I can only speak from my own experience of having been to South Africa, carried out roadshows. I think we're about to embark on, and we'll go into it in just a second. But yeah, 5-6 years ago, sitting across the table, it used to be a lot of people that were considering, you know, retiring or slowing down and moving closer to their family. There were a lot of options there. And throughout the years, the people across the table in Cape Town, Johannesburg, in places that I'm used to seeing, that class of people is changing, because the people across the table are now younger. You know, as young as 23 or 24-year-olds having graduated, and the job market is not that great where they are, so they want to come into the UK. So they are highly qualified people, I might add. But with with the current situation in those countries and the current situation in the UK, where immigration seems to be a political issue, not just one of just rules and regulations anymore, they are finding it increasingly difficult to get those sponsored workplaces in the UK. And if they do, you're right, it is usually someone that's a young professional, which the UK obviously is trying to encourage that sort of demographic of people that they want introducing to the population here. So they're working white-collar professionals as such. But having said that, I'm a little bit, you know, as most practitioners will agree, a bit confused. Because one minute they want to attract them, for the next minute they're making it harder for an employer.
Are there certain professions still in high demand? Because somebody recently told me bricklayers, you know, and there's not enough doctors here. And there is the national health insurance that, you know, in South Africa that is starting to put doctors off if they cancel medical schemes. So, you know, what is the professions that the UK is looking for at the moment?
Good question. You're absolutely right. The professions that the UK is looking for does include bricklayers. Construction seems to have taken a hit. And, you know, people would argue, but I'm a strong believer in the fact that leaving the European Union made that an issue. You know, we had a large workforce from Europe conducting those jobs, filling those positions. And we don't anymore, perhaps. Hospitality is the other one. So it's not just construction. So your bricklayers, your plumbers, electricians, surveyors, and so on. But it's also going down to hospitality route as well. We don't have enough people in hospitality as well. So you know your restaurant managers, your hotel managers, and so on. So hospitality seems to be another area worth looking into if you're looking at coming over into the UK. Obviously, the one that takes the top prize is the medical side of things, our health service, your nurses, your doctors, your healthcare professionals, ranging from people in your nursing home to, you know, it could be your person right at the front of reception at the hospitals as well. So, you know, the skill level varies, but in all, the medical sector is suffering. And that's why they currently do have separate categories that have a slight compensation, or in other words, make it easier for that person to move into the UK if they're going to be working, say, for the NHS. You know, then they don't have to pay those sort of increased health immigration health surcharges, for example, and so on. So it does make it financially viable if you are someone coming over and working in the healthcare sector in the UK. So you're right. It's across not just the healthcare sector, which is the top one, but it's construction, hospitality are the other two ones, with IT being lagging sort of fourth there.
Well, Sable International is hosting expos throughout South Africa. So when will they take place? And what kind of guidance can you give people who, you know, want to go to the UK or somewhere else at those expos? What can they expect there, and why should people attend that?
Yeah, no, people should attend it if obviously there are people that are just generally looking for an idea of moving into the UK, or in fact anywhere really, because we cover a range of other places. But if it is in the UK, which what my side of the firm represents, they can expect to see myself, a whole team, including John, our other director, based in Cape Town, and we would be happy to talk to them about all their options, which doesn't just include British nationality, which has been in the last 2 years quite the topic, and we'll go into it later. But we will discuss all other options that don't just include work visas, but spouse visas, investment, and so on. So what they can expect is a summary of what we think they can use to come into the UK. How much is that overall going to cost them? And when should they start that process? Because it is so important to know when, not just how. Especially if they have children, because it just becomes that much more difficult as those children start reaching that age of 16 onwards. Because what ends up happening is they're coming into the UK and they turn over 18, they want to live an independent life, and they suddenly stop being dependent on the family's visa, and then you have problems. So it is also important to know that. So we'll be covering all of this in a summarized version when they see us for a one-to-one, which actually starts, I mean, I fly out this weekend. On Saturday, I'll be flying out. And I think the first protocol on Monday, coming Monday, is going to be in Pretoria. Then we did a roadshow to Johannesburg. So we're going to be based down in the capital in Johannesburg. And from Johannesburg, we're actually going to go to a place where you would have to correct my pronunciation, but it's called Nelspruit or something like that.
Nelspruit.
Correct.
Nelspruit.
So we're going to be there for the day, see people. It's the first time I'm going to go there. Some of my team have been there before. They are based in South Africa, so I'm excited about that. Then we're going to go from there. We're going to go into Cape Town. We're going to actually this time do Hermanus the week after. So this is the first week of November, by the way. So we're going to cover Hermanus, which I heard is lovely. Again, never been there, so excited to go there and see how we can help people that are based in and around Hermanus. But so we're covering new cities, and at this time we would be covering Durban. But we're going to cover these two new places instead. And a large part of this town's focus is going to be spreading the word on the nationality changes as well that have occurred from June 2022 onwards as well.
So what is the refusal review service of Sable International?
Okay, yes, Linda. So the refusal review service for Sable International is a new product that's actually come out of hearing our clients' frustrations dealing with the passport office and the home office in the UK. And I'm particularly talking about British nationality, of course, in this particular instance. So what we want to do is we want to hear about people's refusals and we want to try and reverse them where possible. And the reason why we think we can is because we've seen practical examples of the refusals that are coming out from, let's say, the passport office not being correct. So we think there is perhaps a training issue, perhaps they don't see these complex applications that often, or maybe they're not referring it in the right channels to someone more senior. But we are seeing a lot of refusals ourselves, which aren't being reversed and granted. And I feel that there must be so many more people trying their best to apply to the passport office, not getting an answer, no one they can talk to and pick up the phone anymore and say, hey, I've applied. What do you mean you need this for? How come you just sent my documents back with a generic refusal letter? It talks about something that's not even in my family. Like my dad born in the UK, but he wasn't. It's through my grandfather and so on. They can't do that. You have to send an email or you have to fill out a complaints process. Most people give up, in my opinion. What we want to do is we want to hear from these people. We want them to come to us and we want them to explain, here's why they think they're refused. Here's the family circumstances. Is the refusal correct? Because we are noticing a high number of refusals from the passport office, a low number from the home office that grant nationality as compared to just print passports. But they are there. And again, we can reverse them as well. One such example was a couple of weeks ago, actually, Linda, if I may share that, is we had a lady who got refused her British citizenship through the home office. And in that, they were disputing the connection of our grandparent or grandfather biologically to her. So they were saying that we don't believe this is your grandfather. But the same person had got an ancestry visa granted them years and years and years back based on the same grandparent from the same government. Clearly, you can't have it both ways. And, you know, we were able to get that refusal reversed because it's wrong. So that's just one example. So we decided that we would welcome people with refusals and they shouldn't be afraid and give it a go yet with us.
Well, Michel Patel, all very interesting for somebody who's thinking of the UK as a destination. Thank you so much.
No worries. Pleasure's all mine. Thank you so much.